Coming up on Fronteras, a San Diego interpreter finds himself at the center of a tense international conflict.
Any interaction between the U.S. and Iran has almost been criminalized.
Recent attention brought to the interpreter's work might have cost him his job. And attacks on reporters and news agencies in Mexico are leading to media blackouts along some parts of the border.
Can they keep it up? You know, I mean, very smart, very rational people are starting to turn away and say, journalism is not worth, you know, my life.
Mexico's reporters are being targeted, but some are not backing down. That story and more on Fronteras. First, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations and funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. As Mexico's drug cartels fight for dominance, reporters have fallen victim to physical threats, even murder. In the last 6 years, at least 67 Mexican journalists were killed, making them among the most targeted reporters in the world. Under the new president, the attacks appear to have increased, leading to news blackouts along the border. The Fronteras desk's Michelle Marisco spent some time with one border reporter and brings us this story.
Iram Gonzalez stands on a quiet street in Nogales, Mexico. He's watching two men peering through the bars of the border fence into the U.S. One is talking feverishly into a cell phone, while the other scrambles up the 25-foot border wall in seconds. Both men are oblivious to a pair of reporters standing on the street just beneath them watching until the man on the cell phone turns around.
Los hizo,
cabrón. Foto no quiero, paisa.
Oh, radio, güey. Radio.
The man doesn't want photos taken, of course. Gonzalez tells him it's just a radio story. The men slouch down the street, shooting glances back over their shoulders before disappearing into an alleyway. Gonzalez is amused. He stops to light a cigarette, juggling a cell phone in his free hand. Just a pair of smuggler spotters, he says. These scenes aren't new for Gonzalez. As a newspaper and television crime reporter, he's covered gun battles live. He's seen government officials arrested for corruption, with them always a lingering threat. It's one that hangs over every one of Mexico's border reporters. Last year, he accidentally drove into the aftermath of a gunfight. He was recognized. The gunman assumed he was there to report. The same day, they called him at the newspaper to threaten him. Then last summer, his home was broken into. Nothing was stolen. They left him a message.
Te vas a morir, reportero. Así me ponen nada más. No se robaron.
Reporter, you're going to die, it said, spelled out in hot sauce on the kitchen table. The Committee to Protect Journalists has consistently named Mexico as one of the deadliest places in the world for reporters. Carlos Loria runs the organization's Latin America program.
Many reporters and media are cowing into silence because they fear reprisal from organized crime and corrupt public officials.
In the last 2 months, a newspaper and a television station in Ciudad Juarez were attacked in drive-by shootings. A reporter in the border town of Ojinaga was gunned down. Then, five employees of a news agency in Coahuila were kidnapped. The news agency announced it will no longer cover organized crime. In Reynosa, a gunfight reportedly happened with as many as 30 dead. The only account was in the U.S. newspaper. To the CPJ's Loria, the pattern is simple. those trying to stop news gathering are winning.
You have organized crime exerting control over large parts of the country without having to use, you know, lethal violence.
Emily Edmonds works with the Woodrow Wilson Center's Latin America office.
Can they keep it up? You know, I mean, very smart, very rational people are starting to turn away and say, journalism is not worth, you know, my life.
As for Gonzalez, well, he hasn't given up yet. He talks about his job while he punches a number into a cell phone in one hand, holds a cigarette in the other, and somehow still manages to navigate a sharp U-turn into oncoming traffic. With violent crime falling in Nogales, he's turned to look at drug smuggling, especially drug tunnels. But first, he wants to investigate who built a massive shrine in town to the icon of organized crime, Santa Muerte. Reporting from Nogales, Sonora, I'm Michelle Marisco.
Now we're going to hear about the career of a San Diego man who makes a living interpreting for others. He may be forced to make a career change, as Jill Replegal explains.
His name is Amir Mohammed Istakhri. He's an American citizen of Iranian descent and a longtime San Diego resident. Istakhri is a native Farsi speaker. That's the official language of Iran. And he speaks Dari, a very similar language spoken in Afghanistan. Istakhri is bicultural, well-educated, and he has experience interpreting in the international business arena. After the 9/11 terrorist attacks, Istakhri's skills were in high demand. In 2005, he began working on contract for the State Department's Office of Language Services.
Number one, I've always been interested in politics, in the implementation of policies.
The Office of Language Services is the federal government's official source of interpreters and translators for the president and top members of his cabinet, for the State Department. They've been doing it since George Washington was in office. Working for LS, Istakhri's career took off.
Throughout the years, I accompanied the highest-ranking Afghan military delegations in their visits across the United States to various military installations.
He also interpreted for top U.S. military leaders and Obama officials. But the work Istakhri did interpreting for Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, that was different.
Many Americans see you as public enemy number one. How do you feel about that?
Here's Istakhri interpreting for Ahmadinejad in an interview last September with CNN's Piers Morgan.
I wish to greet all of the wonderful people of the United States.
Istakhri says he was first hired to interpret for the Iranian president in 2005 by a company that contracts with CNN. And he says his assigning officer at the State Department referred him for the job. After that, Istakhri says, the Iranian delegation to the United Nations in New York would contact him directly when they needed an interpreter for media interviews. But these days, Iran is probably the U.S.'s most visible enemy. And Istakhri's work interpreting for Iranian officials has recently gotten him into trouble. A reporter for the Wall Street Journal wrote an article about Istakhri in February titled, Iranian American Interpreter Speaks for Both Sides. After it was published, Istakhri got a letter from the State Department saying his services were no longer needed. A spokesperson for the State Department declined to comment for this story. I asked Istakhri if he ever considered that his work for Iranian delegations might be a problem.
It wasn't really a concern for me. In fact, I was happy to contribute in order to be able to open the dialogue, in order to be able to even minutely contribute to eliminating possible misunderstandings, which unfortunately thus far they've proved to be futile.
Any interaction between the U.S. and Iran has almost been criminalized.
Jamal Abdi is policy director of the National Iranian American Council. It's a D.C.-based group that advocates, among other things, for a diplomatic solution to the U.S.'s standoff with Iran over that country's nuclear program.
When the reality is the two sides need to be talking. That's really a big part of the problem, that there is so much suspicion and there is no interaction between these two governments.
Abdi says he knows others who have interpreted for Iranian delegations to the U.S., and it doesn't mean they're sympathetic to that government. Shema Syed is vice president of sales and marketing at the San Diego firm Interpreters Unlimited. He pointed out that Istakhri was certified by the State Department's Office of Language Services, which, according to the office's own website, is the gold standard for interpreting and translating. And professional interpreters follow a code of ethics, Syed says, which includes things like being accurate,
ensuring the confidentiality of those for whom you're interpreting for.
And here's another really important one.
Maintaining objectivity.
As Dockery says, he was always objective while on the job, but he does have clear opinions about U.S. relations with the Middle East, especially when it comes to the possibility of a U.S. attack on Iran.
I don't believe we have the heart left in us for another unprovoked war. I think we have had enough American casualties.
As Dockery hopes he'll be asked back to work with the State Department in the future. In the meantime, he's planning a documentary about the Iranian people and a book about everything he's learned over the years, as he puts it, talking for other people. In San Diego, I'm Jill Replogle.
There's still more Fronteras coming up. The Southwest is thirsty.
We're seeing a situation where there's just not water in the river, and our aquifers are dwindling.
Hear how the lengthy drought has started a nasty legal battle over water rights between neighboring Texas and New Mexico. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. A group of senators drafting an immigration reform bill toward the Arizona border Wednesday morning. As Michelle Marisco reports, the senators said they expect to have their bill ready for the public once Congress returns April 8th.
Arizona Senators John McCain and Jeff Flake accompanied Michael Bennett of Colorado and New York's Chuck Schumer to the border. Schumer said the tour taught him that manpower is adequate on the border, but technology is not.
Senator McCain and Senator Flake had impressed upon our group from the beginning the need to do something further on the border, and this trip certainly strengthens that view.
Schumer echoed what McCain had said since before proposing an immigration reform bill. McCain and other Republicans have long said the border is far from secure. On Wednesday's tour, the senators observed drone surveillance planes, helicopters, and checkpoints. McCain said the group also saw a woman scale the border fence with a ladder, but that Border Patrol agents arrested her. He said the ideal level of security is to keep the border under a constant state of surveillance.
And by the way, there are countries in this world not as big a border, but that they've been able to accomplish that.
None of the senators would say what metric they'll be satisfied with to prove that the border is secure. They warned that it will be costly, but that border security will eventually pay for itself by charging fees for visas, especially those for skilled labor. In Nogales, Arizona, I'm Michel Marisco.
Light snowfall and little rain mean the Southwest is bracing itself for yet another year of historic drought. It's a wake-up call for city folk and farmers alike that water is increasingly scarce. In New Mexico, the dwindling water supply has already resulted in costly lawsuits. Monica Ortiz Uribe has the story.
Lately, there's nothing grand about the Rio Grande. Persistent drought has sucked the river dry. It cuts through the entire state of New Mexico, where the situation has state lawmakers in a panic.
Well, it's flat-out scary.
Peter Wirth is the chairman of the Senate Conservation Committee.
What's different is the magnitude of what we're facing, and we're seeing a situation where there's just not water in the river, and our aquifers are dwindling.
When there's no water in the river, thirsty mouths look underground. New Mexico sits above at least 30 subterranean water sources. Each is different. Some are deeper than others, and a few are endangered. Experts say it's difficult to predict how long we can subsist on underground water. And the scary part is no one knows how long the drought will last.
Think of the surface water as your checking account and the groundwater as your savings account.
Philip King is a civil engineer and a water consultant in southern New Mexico. Drought is like unemployment. When you're jobless, you'll likely rely on your savings account. You don't know when you'll get a job, and you can only survive off your savings for so long. And some savings are smaller than others. In New Mexico's Hatch Valley, drought threatens the state's most beloved crop, chili. A field hand in a straw hat shovels sand out of an empty irrigation canal. His skin is like the earth, brown and parched. His boss, Jason Franzoy, is a fourth-generation farmer here. Franzoy is worried. The savings account beneath his feet is running dry.
Average well depth is probably around 60 feet deep, and then you hit clay and that's it.
Franzoy's pumped water from the ground for the last decade, but in the last 2 years, he's pumping more than ever. Groundwater is expensive and the quality is poor. For Hatch farmers, 2 or 3 more years like this could mean a death sentence.
And it's getting harder and harder. And, you know, in my opinion, it's getting worse and worse.
Less than 100 miles south of Hatch, across the state line, Texans are also thirsty. The two irrigation districts on either side of the state border have bickered over water for years. So in 2008, they made a deal they felt evenly distributes water under the current drought. But then New Mexico's Attorney General, Gary King, jumped in saying their agreement was unfair to his state.
We're basically arguing that the division of water by the two irrigation districts is inappropriate.
King filed suit to terminate the agreement. That prompted the state of Texas to sue back in the U.S. Supreme Court, accusing New Mexico of consuming excessive water. Pat Gordon is an attorney representing the state of Texas.
Well, the consequences are the farmers can't grow crops. There's furloughed fields. Most of the farmers in Texas do not have the ability to underground pumping because the water in Texas is brackish.
The high court has yet to decide if they'll take the case, but if they do, and if Texas prevails, farmers in southern New Mexico say that would spell disaster. Greg Davier grows pecans outside Las Cruces.
The entire valley will die. The entire valley will die if we cannot draw on this savings account during this drought.
Davier's 50-year-old pecan trees sit on one of the deepest aquifers in the Southern Valley. But he says a victory by Texas could prevent him from pumping water. He farms on land his great-grandfather sowed a century ago. It's a lifestyle he'd hate to give up.
I like that tie to family and that tie to land. It's not the most prestigious of jobs, it's not the most glamorous, and certainly not the highest paying, but I enjoy going to work every day, and that's worth quite a lot.
One thing is certain, the legal labyrinth will ultimately spill more dollars than it will ever save water. In Las Cruces, I'm Monica Ortiz Uribe.
This week is Semana Santa, or Holy Week. It's a big week in Mexico when schools cancel classes and businesses take a holiday. And it's a big week for retailers in the U.S. Southwest because Mexican shoppers cross the border in droves. For San Antonio, it's one of the biggest weeks of the year for retail sales. And as Fronteras reporter Joey Palacios explains, hopes are high for this year's Semana Santa spending spree because of a powerful peso.
Music pulsates at San Antonio's Shops at La Cantera, a high-end shopping mall. And the cash registers are also pulsating, as shoppers from Mexico are here looking for deals and quality merchandise. Adolfo Musquez is from the state of Coahuila. He and his family make several trips here a year, but Holy Week is a special time to leave Mexico.
You basically shut down all the commerce and all the work there, so the people have a chance to come to the States and do their shopping as well as do as more of a relaxing vacation.
Musquez says he and his family feel safer shopping in the U.S. with the ongoing violence in his country. Even with the stronger peso, Maria Ortiz from Guadalajara says she has more buying power here.
In Mexico, everything is expensive, everything. And here, no. And the sales are very good for us.
The Mexican peso is enjoying a 2-year high in comparison to the dollar, and it's trending up as there's optimism that economic reforms in Mexico will spur greater growth. And that's a good trend for San Antonio merchants like Humberto Fuentes, who caters to Mexican shoppers. He's an assistant manager at Clark's, which sells shoes and purses. He says that during Holy Week, Mexican nationals boost sales about 60%.
I think it's an extra push. It doesn't make us or break us, but it definitely helps us with achieving our budgets, our goals for the end of the year.
However, Holy Week isn't the only Mexican boost that Texas gets. Christmas and July are also high spending periods for visitors as well. Ramiro Cavazos with San Antonio's Hispanic Chamber of Commerce says the owner of two of the city's most affluent shopping malls, including La Cantera, reports that patrons from Mexico make up 50 to 60% of the shopping clientele during these time periods. He claims that many flock to Texas due to its friendly climate.
I think they're coming here because they feel welcome.
Cavazos said that San Antonio is a bilingual city and culturally connected to Mexico, but says that some other southwestern metropolitan areas are not. The economic impact here as a whole is clear. In a three-year study of 20 Texas counties, the credit card company Visa monitored the spending habits of Mexican nationals. There was a 66% increase in spending from March to April last year. In dollars, that's a jump from $168 million to $279 million. Steve Niven is an economist with the Sabre Institute, a creation of San Antonio's Hispanic Chamber and St. Mary's University. They study regional economies. Niven says that boosts like this are something you would not see in other parts of the country.
If you're the metropolitan economy of Kansas City, you're probably not going to see these types of impacts. So it's a nice little addition to our economy that provides a more diversification in our economy and helps provides a little stability in there as well.
This kind of economic impact is unique to the southern border. And as Mexico's economy continues on the upswing with a growing middle class, Holy Week spending could increase, as it's proven in the last 3 years of the study. In San Antonio, Joey Palacios reporting.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting-funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. We're also on Facebook, and we invite you to join the conversations and post your thoughts about our stories. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our main handle is fronterasdesk. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.